the content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Lisa Maxwell from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading from Good Old Days magazine. Well, during the summer months, a lot of people go on vacations and take road trips. So I've got a few stories for you today dealing with vacations. The first one is titled The Most Memorable Vacation, and this is submitted by Marilyn Smith. An early vacation memory that comes to mind happened in the summer of 1973. Our family, my husband, Bill, myself, and our six kids was making a once-in-a-lifetime trip from Ripley, New York, to Farmington, New Mexico, where my family lived when I was growing up. I had not been there since 1961, when my parents celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. By 1973, my mom and dad were gone, but my brother Jim, his wife Martha, and their children Carrie, Jimmy, and Jill still lived there. Also living in Farmington were my widowed sister, Faye, and four of her children, Ned, Tom, Linda, and Pam, plus numerous grandchildren. They all lived in the little town of Farmington in the northeast corner of the state. We had purchased a red 1970 Volkswagen camper bus just before our July trip. The kids took turns sitting in the four seats, or sitting or lying on the floor in back, which for some reason was the favorite spot. Michelle, 5 years old, always had the shelf under the back window. Craig, 22, took turns driving with Dad. The bus pulled a trailer with all our camping equipment. Previous vacations had always been camping trips, so we had two tents, eight sleeping bags, air mattresses, a Coleman stove, a Coleman lantern, two coolers, a large water jug, and bags of non-perishable food, such as cereals, crackers, noodles, and cookies. In the coolers were apples, oranges, cheeses, and processed meat, including lots of hot dogs. These were replenished at local grocery stores, as was the ice for the coolers. We planned our overnight stops at KOA campgrounds, which always had showers and swimming pools. We had AAA triptychs and maps that gave mileage and campsite information. In the 1970s, the average cost for a night at one of these campgrounds was about $6. Some with more amenities cost a little more. That fit our budget fine. The most memorable place we stopped was in the state of Colorado. Traveling on Route 50, we came to the town of Lamar. There was no KOA, but this little town had welcoming signs. Campers and picnickers were welcome to a spacious town park with lots of grass and trees, camper areas, and electric hookups. Especially inviting on that hot day was an Olympic-sized swimming pool. We were tired and hot after a day traveling across the state of Nebraska. The green was so welcome, and we were all ready for a stop. There had been no designation for tents in the park, just lots of hookups for RVs and trailers. So we had chosen a nice, large, grassy spot that was just right for two tents. After the kids helped their dad put up the two tents, they headed for the pool, leaving me to begin planning the evening meal. And after traveling 400 miles, little Michelle needed a quiet nap. Under the comfort of the shade, sleeping bags were spread, and we both took a much-needed rest. There would be time for cooking and food preparation when the others came back refreshed from their swim. I had just fallen asleep when I was suddenly awakened by gushes of water spurting through the open tent flap. The time sprinklers, as we learned later, came on at exactly 5 o'clock every day. Our tents got wet, and Michelle and I were soaked. Luckily, it was still over 80 degrees, and we had plenty of dry clothes. When the others returned, they were surprised to see a dripping wet mom and little sister. After moving our camping area to a spot that was free of sprinklers, my husband and the two boys took the two tents, blankets, and all the sleeping bags to the local laundromat to dry, which was not in our budget, but certainly a necessary expense. That was just one episode of that memorable camping vacation. Ask my children, they each have their own version of the trip. Meeting uncles and aunts and cousins for the first time was one of the best memories. I always remember the trip because it was the last time before we all got involved in other things. For the summer of 1973, we were together for a fun, even when wet, camping trip that we will always remember, especially the timed sprinklers. The next story I have for you is submitted by James Deal, and it's titled, Our Special Summer Pilgrimages. In 1953, when I wasn't even old enough to hold my head up, my family moved from our rural Northern Virginia home to the big city of Detroit. As was the dilemma in those days, many Southern families found work scarce in coal country, but industries to the north were begging for workers. Tired of unpredictable, often unemployment, my dad decided to leave Virginia and seek stability for his family in the booming auto industry. It was a hard decision because Mom and Dad both loved the slow, hospitable Southern life, and Detroit was unlike anything they were accustomed to. Luckily, there were other friends and relatives who made the decision to move north, and they all lived near us. We would all get together often, and you can imagine we mostly talked about back home. As I grew older, hearing all the stories about Virginia endeared the place to me, even though I had never really lived there. It was my heritage, but being such a different environment from where I was growing up, it almost seemed like another country. Not only was the rural lifestyle totally different than mine, the Southern dialect was like a foreign language to me. At least once a year, we would load into the family car and head south down U.S. 23 to visit family and friends who still lived in Northern Virginia. In the late 1950s, the drive south was a 12-hour trip that took us through one small town after another, with roadside attractions that range from rattlesnake pits to the home sites of famous people. It wasn't simply a trip. It was an adventure, complete with a thrilling ride over the impressive Ohio River and views of the towering peaks of the Smoky Mountains. It wasn't a climate-controlled, comfy ride back then. Our family's 56 Ford Fairlane didn't have air conditioning, and the suspension made curves and bumps feel like being on a ship in rough water. Getting stuck in road construction on a 90-degree day certainly made you long for the breeze 65 miles an hour could generate. However, in my opinion, all the discomfort only added to the thrill and challenge of our excursion. If there had been a real downside for me, it would have been being stuck in the back seat with two annoying sisters and any luggage that wouldn't fit in the trunk. Along the way, we stopped at roadside rest areas and ate food that Mom had packed for the trip. I remember Dad assuring us the rest area was just around the next curve as our bellies growled for several more miles. Homemade ham sandwiches, creamy potato salad, and ice-cold pop from the cooler seemed more delicious than usual, but then again, our meal was being consumed in a different state with new and interesting surroundings. It was just a simple picnic, but being on the road, headed to our much-anticipated destination, it felt like a special sacred feast. The lobby outside the restrooms always had maps and interesting facts about the area that I would peruse as if they were a school assignment. By the time Dad spotted the state line and boldly read the sign, Welcome to Virginia, we were all a little worse for wear, but that didn't squash our enthusiasm. As all the occupants of the car cheered, I could feel my anticipation increasing. I was anxious to see all the places I had heard stories about and meet close relatives I hardly knew. All the steep mountains, deep gorges, and dark, intriguing hollows just added to the mystique of it all. It was an extreme contrast to the flat landscape and predominantly concrete construction of my Michigan home. Virginia was a whole new world to me. Eventually, the road narrowed, and well off the beaten path, we traveled through the backwoods where all the fascinating family stories I had heard originated. On many of the mailboxes were familiar names that I had heard a thousand times. Some were even the same as my own last name. People sitting on front porch swings waved as we passed while Mom and Dad gave quick lessons on their ancestry. Dad pointed to the numerous narrow dirt roads that jutted off through the various mountain passes and told of friends or distant relatives who lived there. This wasn't simply a summer vacation or a trip to get away from it all. It was much more. It was a reaffirmation of who we were as a family and a reconnecting to our southern roots. When we reached our destination, it didn't feel as if we had gone away. It felt like we were coming home. For many people, summer vacations meant visiting a resort or spending lazy days at a cabin or a lake. But for me, our vacations were much more. They were special journeys with meaning. They were pilgrimages. And our next vacation story is titled Keeping Water on the Driver's Side, and this is by Bill Barrick. Dad often yarned about the time when, as a teen in the 1930s, his family had driven from Chicago, hoping to visit relatives in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. After driving through Lower Michigan, they boarded a ferry, the only way to cross the Straits of Mackinac. But they were chased back to the dock by a violent pop-up storm. After two frustrating days waiting for friendlier weather, they headed back home. As the saying goes, there's no way to get there from here. But years later, a bridge was built. In 1957, Lower Michigan was finally connected to the Upper Peninsula by the 5-mile-long Mackinac Bridge. Dad saw his shot at crossing the straits. It would be Mom, Dad, and me on a week-long circle tour around Lake Michigan. Dad proclaimed two rules for the trip. We'd hug the coastline on the back roads and cook our meals on a small charcoal grill. In August 1962, when I was 13, we headed out from Hammond, Indiana, which is located just a few miles from the lake. Our first official view of the lake during this vacation was a peek at a sliver of blue between steel mills. Leaving urban clank and grime behind, we chose a route that once was an old Pottawatomie Indian Trail, the high ground closest to the Indiana and Michigan shoreline. Without Google to hold our hand, we relied on printed maps, which were free at filling stations. It required skill to read one, like being able to tell north from south, estimating driving times, knowing the type of road from its printed color, deciphering those microscopic distance numbers between towns, and using the scale of miles indicated on the map, abilities that are all but lost to today's digital travelers. Dad was at the helm, while Mom was on the lookout for grocery stores and roadside picnic spots. When radio stations crackled out of range, she entertained with hits of the 1940s and 50s a cappella. I was in the back seat, seated between comic books on one side and an open map on the other, ready to direct Dad to any thin gray line that skirted the shore. Back then, lakeside roads were dotted with quaint summer cottages, one-pump gas stations, farm stands, and souvenir shops, a testimony to the simpler, slower days of vacation travel. Our first stop was the marina in St. Joseph, Michigan, about 30 miles up the coast from the Indiana state line. Faking interest in the sailboats, I was drawn more to the teenage girls sunning themselves on decks. Further on the same day, we visited Deer Forest in Coloma, a long-gone, old-timey amusement park. I declined Mom's offer to accompany her on the kiddie train to Chewing through the grounds. With a possibility of girls looking on, I spent my 25 cents throwing baseballs at bottles. Hunting for a vacancy sign took the place of making reservations. We eventually found a small cottage in South Haven, close to the beach, and just in time to witness our first sunset over the lake. At dawn, on day two, we were out on the breakwater renting bamboo poles, buying minnows, and catching stringers of perch. Mom filleted and iced a week's supply. After the first of many fish fries on our grill, we hit the road. We got lost a few times, but keeping water on the driver's side meant we were still pointed north. Spontaneous stops to lie on a beach, splash in the surf, or hunt for beach glass made for a slow, easy pace. Eventually, we pulled into Holland, Michigan. Famous for its tulip festival in May, Dad splurged and bought a single red tulip for Mom while we were there, which she slid into the visor. Later that day, we made it to Guest Sleeping Bear Dunes, one of the tallest piles of sand in the States. Mom and Dad prepared our perch dinner while I trudged up and down the dune. Sunset number two. Our next stop on day three was Traverse City. We stayed at a lakeside motel and saw more sailboats. I got to talking with a girl my age and thought I'd found heaven when I was invited to come aboard her family's sailboat. The gentle rock of the boat and listening to the drifters on the radio while a third sunset took place convinced me I was in love. On day four, we made it to the Straits of Mackinac. We toured the old French trading post, Michilly Mackinac, where the two skyward suspension towers of the new Mackinac Bridge loom just blocks away. Dad had done his research and rattled off all the engineering stats. Height of the main towers, 552 feet above water. Maximum height of the roadway above water, 199 feet above water. 3 years to build, and on and on. We paid the $3.25 toll and then pulled onto the bridge, gradually rising above toy-like ocean-going vessels negotiating the straits far below. This was Dad's moment of glory after a 25-year wait, but Mom was horrified. Passing over the see-through, steel-grating road surface felt like we were suspended in mid-air. That night, we stayed with Dad's cousin, who still lived in the Upper Peninsula, our fourth sunset over the lake. The next leg of our journey took us across the Upper Peninsula, which was mostly wilderness with sparse motels and gas stations. That's where we got two flat tires within 50 miles. But Dad was no road rookie. He had brought along two spare tires. Just across the Wisconsin line, we shared a cabin with bedbugs. And, of course, we had more perch for dinner. Now, on the western shore of the lake, we had flipped from seeing sunsets over the water to seeing sunrises. Our next stop was the Wisconsin Dells. A faint memory of my last vacation crush replays like a slow-motion movie scene. She wades ashore in a one-piece bathing suit and pulls off her rubber bathing cap, revealing curly red hair. She smiles at me. That's it. In Milwaukee, we got tickets to watch the Braves host the Cincinnati Redlegs, as they were called, in an unusual midweek day game. We'd had our fill of perch, so the hot dogs sold at the game hit the spot. I was fixed on number 44 out in right field, Hank Aaron. I don't remember who won that day or if Hammering Hank even got a hit, but I remember bragging to my friends that I'd seen one of our heroes in person. A cheesy motel on Milwaukee's south side gave us our last sunrise of our vacation, but we didn't see it over water, but over concrete and steel. Leaving Milwaukee, we continued hugging the lakeshore. We crossed into Illinois just 80 miles from the Indiana line. Dad wanted to take a tour of the Great Lakes Naval Training Station near Waukegan and visit the Shipboard Maritime Museum. Recruits were marching all over the place. 7 years later, I'd be pounding the same pavement myself. With water still on the driver's side, but heading south. Now, ever since we rounded the top of the lake, we got our last look at Lake Michigan as we cruised past Chicago's Jackson Park and the pristine lakefront. Dad had finally crossed the Straits of Mackinac. We'd finish off the perch, and the circle was complete. We were back home again in Indiana. And next, I got a little road trip trivia for you. Can you answer these questions related to road trips? Where is the Gateway Arch located? St. Louis. Which U.S. national park is the oldest? Yellowstone. Which American shaving cream company was known for its creative roadside signs? That would be Burma Shave. When did President Eisenhower sign the Federal Aid Highway Act, which created the interstate highway system? That was in 1956. What well-known gas station brand featured a green dinosaur as its mascot? Sinclair Oil. What famous road connected Chicago to Santa Monica, California? That is Route 66. How many places are mentioned in the Johnny Cash version of the song I've Been Everywhere? 92. Which U.S. cave is considered the world's longest known cave system? That is Mammoth Cave in Kentucky. And last, can you name the state where the city Truth or Consequences is located? New Mexico. Our last vacation story is submitted by Cathelia, and it's titled Nostalgic Ice Cream. When I was a child, my family used to go on summer vacation to a small town on the coast every year. It was a tradition that we all looked forward to, and each year was filled with new adventures. However, one particular summer stands out above all the others. We had rented a small cottage near the beach, and every day we woke up early so we could go out to explore. We spent our mornings walking along the shoreline, collecting seashells and playing in the water. In the afternoons, we ventured into town to try out new restaurants and visit local shops. One day, we stumbled upon an old-fashioned ice cream parlor complete with a red and white striped awning and a neon sign that read, Joe's Ice Cream. As soon as we walked in, we were greeted by the sweet aroma of freshly made waffle cones and the sound of a bell ringing as the server scooped our ice cream. We sat down at a small table and bit into our ice cream cones, savoring the taste as we chatted and laughed. As we sat there watching people walk by outside and feeling the warm sun on our faces, I remember feeling an overwhelming sense of joy and contentment. Years later, whenever I think back on that summer, I can't help but smile. It was a time in my life when everything felt simple and carefree, and I was surrounded by the people I loved most in the world. That ice cream parlor became a symbol of that happiness, and every time I pass an old-fashioned shop like that, I can't help but feel a sense of nostalgia for that special time in my life. In many ways, that summer was a turning point for me. It was a time when I realized that happiness wasn't about big accomplishments or fancy things. It was about the simple moments we share with the people we love. And for that, I will always be grateful. Since we celebrate Independence Day during the month of July, I do have a poem I would like to read for you, and it's entitled, A Patriotic Creed, by Edgar Guest. To serve my country day by day at any humble post I may, to honor and respect her flag, to live the traits of which I brag, to be American indeed, as well as in my printed creed, to stand for truth and honest toil, to till my little patch of soil, and keep in mind the debt I owe to them who died that I might know my country prosperous and free, and passed this heritage to me. I must always in trouble's hour be guided by the men in power. For God and country I must live, my best for God and country give. No act of mine that men may scan must shame the name American. To do my best and play my part, American in mind and heart. To serve the flag and bravely stand to guard the glory of our land. To be American indeed. God grant me strength to keep this creed. Next, I have a short story for you, submitted by Mike Stevens, and it's titled, The Day Grandpa Baptized the Preacher. My grandfather grew up in Emmett, Arkansas in the early 1900s. Community baptisms were common in those days, and a large crowd was usually in attendance. One of the popular baptizing places was a wide creek with a sloping bank that was near my grandparents' house. One drawback was that there was a deep drop-off if you walked out too far. To mark the drop-off, a stick was placed at that spot. One Sunday, a baptism was scheduled. My grandfather thought of a way to liven things up. He cut a longer stick and placed it beyond the drop-off. The baptism was going on as planned. The preacher and his charge walked out into the creek, and suddenly both disappeared under the water. In a few moments, a surprised preacher and his charge came to the surface. They never did find out who baptized the preacher. From things my parents used to say, whenever Kevin Davis's mom was rushing around to get a job done, she would declare, "The hurrier I go, the behinder I get." And at mealtimes, Lynette Denovich remembers her mother announcing, "It's time to eat, so take a seat and pass the meat." We have run out of time for today's episode of Good Old Days. Be sure to tune in next time, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Lisa Maxwell for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Good Old Days is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. And again, that number is 919-832-5138. And we thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.